visit all the places of pilgrimages, bow down to all the saints and aspirants that you meet on the road, that is the sadhus, and sing in praise of the Lord, you see. He was a good singer. He used to play one of these string instruments, you see. So will it be possible, and not touch women, and not drink anything, any hard liquor, don't cook food, don't eat anywhere, but beg for your food, and only eat vegetarian food. Will that be possible for you? He was so happy, he was so delighted that Baba has given him now these instructions. And, yes, Baba, with all my heart, I will do this. Baba says, all right, do it. I am just driving home to you how mundane is our concept of real spirituality. Anything that appeals to us seems to be spiritual to us, you see. While we aspire for truth. Not that what the master would say or what the God-man would order us to do. So this is one of the cases. So what happened is that this man goes out, sets out on his pilgrimage, goes from place to place and does it sincerely. Honestly, he follows through the whole program. He comes back home. In the meantime, we have left for a new life. We don't know what happened to him when he returned. There were scores of such instances. But this being a funny incident, you see, that Baba gave such funny orders to this man to follow first, and then he refused it. The impressions remain, you see here. And we remember this story, this incident. So we roamed about in our new life and went from place to place, and we forgot about this man and all that. When we came back again and passed through that town, all of a sudden, I remembered what has happened to the man who was sent out by Baba. Has he returned or not? Just then, that was when Baba went out to the States in 1952, and Baba had sent Pendu and self, you see, to go out and blurt out about Baba and all that, you see. I don't know what happened that time. That was the time when I was in that town. So I made inquiries as to what happened to the person. He says, don't ask us, Eraj. It's terrible. I said, what happened? Nobody knew context, you see. So they did not want to talk about this person. And I was very intrigued as to what has happened. Why don't they want to talk about this person? He was close to Baba. He used to come to Baba every now and then. So I found her. I said, what's the matter after all? Why don't you tell me? He says, well, we are really very ashamed to tell you about him. See, he who was so religious-minded, so spiritual-minded, you see, he has kept two or three women in his house, prostitutes in his own house, and he drinks now. And he has left off all the Brahminical habits. He indulges in meat, fish and eggs and all that. And he drinks a lot, you see. He keeps himself all the time intoxicated, you see. And he indulges in women. Nobody knew the secret, you see, except myself and a few close ones near Baba. Why is all this? Baba of his own wanted to erase all those impressions by giving these direct orders to him to do. That wouldn't have created those impressions. On the contrary, that would have nullified the impressions that were to be spent by this man, a Brahmin, a good person who had come in close contact with Baba. Baba wanted to help him. The time had come, he came to Baba. Baba wanted to give him his grace, you see, and help him out. But he thought that Baba was not serious about spirituality. And Baba said that he was absolutely serious about spirituality. He wanted him to obey these commands. Had he done so, it would have just taken a day or two, you see, and everything would have been off. But here, poor fellow went all the way, you see, right thousands of miles on foot, came back all the way, empty-handed. But he had the satisfaction that he had done something great, that he had attained great spiritual heights, you see, by going in the conventional way, you see, of begging for food and singing with the bhajans of God and then bowing down to religious places and paid homage to the places of pilgrimage and all that. It means nothing. This is just zero. Where the God-man is there, you see, to give his grace in no time. Everything would have finished in just one little sitting, you see. Had he gone through the orders. So that is what I say, what a contrast it is of our conventional beliefs regarding spirituality and what Baba wants us to do. Oh, never. They can't touch. They only deal with water that is from the river Ganges, considered to be the sacred river. Yes. No other water is suitable to them. So to such a person, Baba gives him the orders, which are quite contradictory, you see, to their ethical concepts, you see. Their very ethics cannot permit, you see, even to think of these things. And he is told to do that. And he thinks that Baba is joking with him. But Baba is rather serious about it. Why? Because all these things are filled in him, in his mind there, you see. There's a mine of all these things. He has to indulge in all these things, you see. He has to pass through all these things. He has to experience these things to be aware, to be out of all this maze, you see, that is there. So Baba on his own gives him the order because he is really sincere to achieve something. So Baba gives him this facility. Because Baba on his own orders him to do such things, they are not binding. They don't bind him at all, you see. But he took Baba's orders lightly. He said Baba is just playing fool with him. So he asked for something which is spiritual according to him. And that was, as I told you, to go on a pilgrimage and go on barefoot and beg for food and this and that and all that. So he felt happy about it. But when he returned, what happened is that he was very happy, very elated. He came back and he started his business and all that. He was a businessman, I know. Then what happened in the house? Gradually those impressions unfolded. And then what happened? Maybe there might have come a friend, you see, who offered him a drink. It just, the whole thing, you see, got built up there. And he started indulging in this. And then he got caught in this.
He was celebrating his supposed release.
Yeah.
It was not a real release.
No.
So the celebration permitted him to...
Yeah.
So the actual end of him was...
Pitiable. Had he done all these things, in the first place, where the master himself commanded him to do, he would have been released totally.
Mind wanted to tell the story about when people ask you what you gain from
being a father. It was sometime in the 40s when I think I had. How many years? 38 and the years. Say about 10, 12 years. You know, every 12 years is called a tap. You know, there are called tapasvis who do taps, you know, and jap and all that. These are the words. Tap means a session of austerities, you see. An era or a sort of a period of austerities. It is divided into 12 years. Every 12 years that he has undergone three taps. I mean 36 years, a duration of 12 years each. So I may have passed the duration of the first tap or something like that at that time. All of a sudden, you see, it dawned upon me when people started asking me as to how many years I had passed near Baba and what I had gained. With Baba, you see, usually Baba remained in seclusion and wouldn't permit people to come near him and all that. We were, so to say, well protected because of Baba's own instructions that nobody should disturb him. So as nobody wanted to disturb him, naturally we remained undisturbed. But occasionally when Baba permitted people to come to him and they came for his darshan and Baba allowed them, so naturally there would be the mingling. So people would come and ask us, you see, well, how many years have you passed near Baba? So we'd say that 12, 13, 14 years have passed now. And some would say that, what do you do whole day? Then we'd say, we don't know what we do whole day. We are just taken aback, you see. We have no answer to say, what do we do whole day? Do we write? No. Do we lecture? No. Do you serve in the fields? No. What do you do? Is there any shop here that you work? No, nothing of the sort. What do you do whole day? Well, we don't know, we have no answer. What have you gained by being near Meher Baba for so many years? No answer. What's the gain? What did I gain? We don't know. So these things started, you see, these impressions started accumulating. And one day, it affected me. And like Narad, you know, I was also sitting gloomily over here, you see. And I said, what's the matter with me? What has happened? But my mind started saying that, Erich, what have you gained by being near Meher Baba for so many years? People are asking, what's the answer? No answer. That means no gain. So, then one day, Baba says, what's the matter? It happened. Are you not? So one day Baba asks, what's the matter with you? Are you all right? I said, yes, Baba, there's nothing wrong. Then why are you so disinterested in all these things? Well, Baba being Baba, he had the knack, you see, to bring out the venom that filled our system, you see. He always wanted us to vomit it out, as he used to call it. So I told him that this was my difficulty, that of late people were asking us, all of us, the question, and sometimes they ask this question directly to me and I have no answer to give. What have I gained, they ask me. So Baba smiled with his that compassionate smile as we remember, very loving, and he said, but how can there be an answer to a wrong question? How can you give a correct answer to a wrong question? So I just looked, what is this wrong question? How can a question be a wrong question? Is always question after all. How can there be a right question and a wrong question? So Baba even differentiated between a right question and a wrong question. He says, the ones who ask you, what have you gained by being near Meher Baba, they have put you definitely a wrong question. The proper question for them to ask you is, how much have you lost by being near Meher Baba? That would be the right question, you see. Nobody comes to me to gain anything. I want them to become empty completely, to lose everything, so that they will know who they really are, you see. What an explanation, yeah. What an explanation, yeah. Everything was said in this, that's all. Right, Mimi? So, you see, this story about the sadhus and the prasad was told to some of the people in the group with a context, reference to context, you see. How important it is for us to take Baba's words seriously when he tells us not to pay visit to any sadhus or saints or masters, you see. There's some meaning behind all these things. Not that our God is not a jealous God, because I tell you, believe me, I have lived with this God-man for 40 years. And I tell you from my experience that indeed, God is extremely jealous. Believe me that. But apart from that, you see, he wouldn't want us, his children, to love anybody else other than him. And in his being jealous, he exercises his infinite compassion for his children, I tell you. So, every time there would be visitors over here, he would go out of his way and tell them to go home straight, carrying his love with them in their hearts, back to their homes, and share his love with their people, you see, there. He wouldn't want us to go out, you see, sightseeing or pay visit to this master or that ashram or go to that saint or that sadhu or that yogi, you see. He wouldn't want us to do that. He would take every pain and precaution to see that his lover, mind you, I'm using the word his lover, Not anybody else. There will be thousands coming. He wouldn't take care. He didn't care for anybody going here or there, you see. But once he has accepted that person, that child into his own lap, onto his own lap, and considered him as his lover, to him he would tell. So every time the person would come for his darshan, so there would be a signal from Baba. I had to get up and go and whisper the words in the ear of that person, says, look here, boy, Baba wants you to go back to your home, carrying his love with you. Don't go here or don't go there. Don't pay visits to the saint or sadhus or ashrams or yogis or anything. Go back straight. Carry his love with you. So every time there would be that signal, and Erich would go out and come back, and Baba would ask, did I tell him properly? Did he hear it? Oh, year after year, you see, it went on and on and on. Till one day, volcano erupted in Erich, you see. Baba, but they are the ones who repeated the visits to you, you see. They know your instructions once and for all. They know it. It has been printed. Everything has been done. These people have been told time and again. These are our own people. This is my mother, father, brother, sister. They know it. We have been brought up in your vicinity all these years. Now, go and tell them. Again, Erich has to go and tell them. Well, he goes and tells them. But Baba, being the compassionate father, he has to pacify. I am also his child, isn't it? Although I stay with him, lived with him, whatever it be, I still remain as a child, a baby. So he has to pacify my tantrums too, you see, must see to that. So one day he takes an opportunity, while I'm driving him in the car, he tells me the explanation as to why he said these things, why he takes so great a care and pain to drive home this fact. He said, I tell you, I am the God in human form, the God in human form. I am the one who comes time and again. I repeat my visitations on this earth for my own children, to make my love tangible to them, to make my being tangible to them, you see, through my presence, because form can recognize form alone. I tell you this little story, and you answer me honestly, said, on this earth, love affairs take place everywhere. Don't they? Baba puts this question to me. I said, yes, Baba. Take for instance that there is a beloved, a very beautiful woman who is loved by a person. A man loves her. But somehow or other, you see, because of her beauty, although the man loves that woman, the woman all the time promises the man, you see, of her love for him, and yet there is no tangible expression, you see. So what happens? The man just remains in the air all the time, with just clutching his love for her. He just clutches that love and remains there, you see. He feels secure because he knows that he loves her. Then what happens, Baba says? Out of the blue, one day comes the information through somebody that your beloved wants you. Go and hurry to her. What a joy it is in his heart that day. How beautiful it is for the lover to be remembered by the beloved. And then he makes preparations. He wants to fly to the beloved if he can. Would you ever imagine, even would you dream of that lover on his way to his beloved would ever want to pay a visit to the brothels and pass a night with any other prostitute, any woman? Is it ever possible in this world, Baba asks? Is it ever possible for that man to pass a night with another woman when he is visiting his beloved? Is about to visit his beloved en route? Does it ever happen here? If he is a lover, does it happen? Say it. Why do you gaze at me? Yes, it's a question that Baba puts us. Do you ever find in this world a lover who has been called by the beloved, you see, after so many years of waiting, and when he is on, and he is longing to pay a visit to her, en route, would he ever dream of paying a visit to another woman? Does it happen like that? A lover of a beloved? I am talking about a lover and the beloved, mind you, sir. Not a man and a woman. I am not Eastern or Western.
Now, even
Fred,
if it's an ordinary person, Eris says, someone who has been waiting for that call and loves her so much, this beautiful woman, when he has...
Couldn't dream of such a thing.
And at last he's called by him, say, come. Well, for heaven's sake, he's trying the way to go as fast as he can to her. In that case, would he ever dream of stopping on the way, loitering, and passing his time with another woman?
No. Tell us.
No.
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 So,
I am talking about a lover who has only one beloved, and he has been loving that woman with all his heart and soul. Would he ever want to, when he receives the call, on his way to his lover, would want to pass
beloved.
The night? Yeah, beloved, would he want to pass a night with another woman? Would he be faithful to the beloved if he were to do so? Would he be?
Sure.
Would he be faithful if he were to pass a night with another woman?
Of course not.
No, that's right what I say. So that's what Baba says, that if such a thing can never happen on this earth, how much more a beloved I am for the whole world. How can ever such a thing take place, you see, while I am here on this earth, when you come to me, when you love me as your beloved, how can ever you dream of paying such visits there? But I know
to saints
and sadhus who are my children too. Well, they are my creatures. They are my same beings, you see. But then Baba says we are apt to forget these things. But because of my love for my children, I constantly remind them. I dare not forget to remind them because I love them. It's the exercise of my compassion that I have to remind them. So that's why what you have to do, he tells me now, what you have to do is to carry out my commands. Do your duty and just convey the instructions that I want you to tell them. You have nothing to do with it. How many times I have told them, or how many times I've repeated to each one, it's not your lookout. All what you have to do is to just obey the command. And just do one thing. When you come back, when you come to Baba, come for Baba and to Baba. When you go back, carry his love home back straight. So that was the instruction that I had to convey to these people. And another thing that Baba would say is, whenever a person would come to him, Baba would say, now remember, be here. So the person would look at Baba. What does Baba mean by this? Be here means what? He is here already. No, you be here. So there is a world of difference between his physical presence being here and his mind being here. Although he is here physically, his mind hovers, you see, at home. He has left behind his ailing wife, or that wife who is in hospital about to deliver a baby, whether everything is safe there, all that will not count. It would have been far better had he remained there and thought of Baba from his home than to have come over here and be at the place from where he has come. So that's why Baba all the time had to remind some people, you see, be here, relax, be here, now that you have come to me, be here. Where else can one be, you see? From all outward expression, one would just say, what is this old man trying to say? Be here means what? I am here, of course. So that's also another sign that he would say. And we would at once gauge, you see, what he means by it through what he had explained before. So those people would come and ask us, what does he mean? Now we are here. So we'd tell them, oh, he says, that's right, that's right. Then they would also confess where they were, you see, and they would be brought back to Baba.
And we have also seen that those who were here, who had been here, in the sense Erich was explaining, that Baba had also been there, looking after their their problems, their family, whatever was troubling them. He was taking care of it there, because Baba can do it much better than we can. And when we are with Baba, Baba is there looking after whatever was worrying us. And we've heard that from different people, saying, oh, this happened, and I was worried. But everything turned out all right. It was such a coincidence. So-and-so came out of the blue, came and asked me, can I do this? And they took care of the children. And it's like that story I told you the other day, James. The story about how you have, when you come to Baba, you have to leave your buffalo behind you, never to bring your buffalo with you.
Right, now it's tea time.
You're going to leave us hanging?
Maybe I'll take a bit of snuff. That'll help.
That's untakeable.
And now!
I don't understand. You know,
Well, it's good we've stopped presents, because now I can see there'd be tins of snuff coming for me.
Most people don't know that, though, Monty.
No, you better not put that on tape, huh? Or
it's all there. I can't erase it now. It's on there.
Well, Jim Myers sent me some snuff. But it's so good, refined, you know, and very nicely flavored. I just sniff at it sometimes. But this plain tobacco, plain Indian kind, like you like the biddies, you see, like... Actually, so everybody knows now, I take sniff snuff. Should I sneeze for you in the mic?
Sure, go ahead. Okay, got it.
But actually... actually... Wait a minute, don't put it up till I tell you. It's only those who are not used to snuff sneeze when they take a pinch of snuff. When I take a pinch of snuff, it is because I've been sneezing or about to get a cold. And the snuff helps immediately. Mm-hmm. It's the other way around.
Sometimes when I get a sore throat.
That's it. Okay, what was the story?
Good man, God.
Oh, yes.
Oh, sorry.
Story. You haven't taken on tape before? Well, this was the time when Colonel Francis Goldney, a Baba lover who's in Faroe Islands, very, very fine person, and Baba allowed him to stay for a few days in Meherazad. He had come at that time to help Irene Conybeare do her manuscript. You know. And when he came, the second time when he came for a few days, he came with his wife, whom he had just married, Ola. So Francis and Ola had both come. Now, Francis accepted, recognized, loved Baba. But Ola was reserved. She was, in a way, resisting Baba. She felt nervous that, what is all this? You know, she might, that Baba would take her husband away. That
he didn't understand Baba.
Huh? No, she didn't understand about Baba. But vaguely, she was afraid that by loving Baba, her husband was going to go further away from her. Anyway, when she came, she didn't understand, and she couldn't adjust. But she liked Baba very much, because you can't help it. And Baba was very loving, asked after her and put her at her ease, and she liked us very much. We would sit and talk with her and see to her needs. Rano used to take her meals and breakfast and things to her room. And we liked her too. We liked her very much. But now, after a few days when they were here, there was a program fixed at Meherabad. This was in Meherazad when they were here. And Francis was very eager that his wife should love Baba, should understand him as Francis did, Francis Goldney. So, when Baba and the men Mandali went over to Meherabad for this program, where Baba was to wash the feet of a number of poor people who were collected and brought there for that reason, and would give them grains and clothing, prasad. See, that was one of his usual working. So that was set up there, and Baba also took Francis Goldney along,
and his wife Ola went too. So Francis and Ola were sitting a little distance away from where Baba was seated. Baba was surrounded with the men Mandalay and all these poor people who were coming one by one, and the Mandalay were giving Baba the towel, the water. He would wash their feet, wipe their feet, the poor people's feet, bow down places, head on their feet, and then quickly give them the grain. All this very quick and quick speed, but very fluidly, just like Baba, so that nothing looked strained or unnatural, but in the most natural, fluent way Baba was doing that. But very, very quick it was happening, because there were many who were to receive from Baba his touch, his prasad. So while Baba was so busy actively doing this, giving prasad here to this one, here to that one, and bowing, and quick, 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 it was going on, at this little distance away, Goldney, that is Francis, told his wife, Ola, you see how Baba's doing that? Wanted her to be impressed. And she was. So she said, yes, yes, he's good man. He's good man. And Baba, in the midst of giving prasad and that quick activity, turns around suddenly, flashes a glance at her, and with that authority that can only come from the very source of his being, he gestures, and Erich interprets, I am not good man, I am God man. And immediately turns back as if nothing had happened and continues giving his prasad. And do you know, later Ola told us that that was the moment, that there was no denying it when Baba said, I am God man. Because Baba, being the God man, when he said it, well, there was no doubt in her mind, no question. Of course, Baba is the God man. But the way he turned it, you know, he's good man. And Baba said, I'm not good man, I'm God man. And just went on with his giving prasad here, giving the sari here, giving the grain there, washing the feet. Some time ago, that Baba was very fond of music by Otis Redding, that he heard his songs every day, and that at the time when Otis Redding died in a plane crash, Baba was listening to his record album here in Mehrazad or Guru Prasad, wherever he was at the time. Well, I would like to make it clear that the story has gotten a bit garbled in transit from one to the other. It was not Otis Redding. We have not heard his songs. But it was Jim Reeves, an American singer who died in a plane crash about 4 or 5 years before Baba heard his songs. And when Baba first heard his song, here in this very hall in Mehrazad where you are seated, my brother Adi from London had brought among some gifts for Baba a little record of a song by Jim Reeves, and the song was There Is a Heartache Following Me. And when that was played, Baba liked it so much, and he said Jim Reeves' voice has touched my heart. He put his finger over his heart. And he had it played again and again, then to the men Mandalay, then when a few days later when somebody else came. Then when we went to Guru Prasad, in 1968, when Baba was doing tremendously important seclusion work, according to his own saying, and during that strenuous seclusion work that Baba did in 1968 in Guru Prasad, for relaxation, when he would be having lunch or in the afternoons when he was for a while with the men Mandalay, the only relaxation he would ask for would be that we play the records, the songs of Jim Reeves. And Baba said, just as in Indian singing, the voice of Begum Akhtar touched my heart, in the same way in English singing, Jim Reeves' voice has touched my heart. And so he wanted all the records of Jim Reeves, any that are available. The songs didn't matter so much. But then we had to. So we called for whatever was available in Pune, and then Arnavas and others got some from Bombay. But while Baba was having lunch on the dining table in Guru Prasad, and we were all sitting around, there was the little portable gramophone on the table, and Jim Reeves' songs were played. And the first song he wanted was "There Is a Heartache Following Me," followed by any or all of other Jim Reeves, particularly any new ones. Any new ones, Baba would say, "Oh, this is a new one. I've not heard it before." Play it. And then after all those were played, when lunch was over and it was time for him to go over to the men mandalis, that side, that wing of Guru Prasad, which was closed, always separate from the women's side, as usual. When Baba was going over to the men mandali, the last record he again wanted me to play on the gramophone was "There Is a Heartache Following Me." So that when it was played the second time, the sound, the voice would go over to the men's side through the transoms, the ventilators. And as soon as that started, we would hear Erich's voice shouting, "Francis, everybody, Baba's coming. Pao, where are you? Baba's coming." They knew now that Baba... And even before that song would be completed, even while it was being played, Baba was ready to leave for the other side. The door was open for him to go out over to the men's side. And there he was walking along in his sadra, because usually it was summertime when we were in Guru Prasad, with Mera by side, and as Baba would walk along towards the door, and the strains of the song by Jim Reeves, just following him, "There is a heartache following me." And that would be the end of the day's music program. And this would be repeated. Yes. Huh? Yes. So Baba was so pleased with the voice of Jim Reeves, Baba would tell Francis Brabazon, who was with us, Baba would say, "Francis, how good it would be if Jim Reeves were alive and he could sing the ghazals, the English ghazals composed by you. What a combination. That would just be right." And we're not very sure how pleased Francis was, but then Baba said, "Someday it will be. One of mine will come along with the voice of Jim Reeves and will sing Francis's ghazals." Then one of the records that we were able to obtain later was "Welcome to My World." And when that was played, Baba liked it very much. When Jim Reeves' records were being played, Baba would, you know, when he liked good music, Baba would sway a bit from side to side or make some gestures saying how good it is, and always that finger would go towards his heart and say, it touches my heart and it's so good. His voice is so good. And when this "Welcome to My World" was played, Baba told me the men mandali would also like to hear it. Bring it over. So there was Baba walking in front and I going along with a gramophone behind him. And I went over with him to the men's side. And because it was that strict seclusion time, when nobody from outside was allowed to enter Guru Prasad, none of us, women or men mandali, were allowed to go outside of Guru Prasad, no matter what, so that the men were beginning to look like hippies, no haircut, you know. And so when I went along with Baba to the mandali's little hall, the men's hall, as we called it, and I put down this record to play. Baba was seated in that chair, which is now in Mehrabad, in the museum, the green-covered chair. And Baba was seated in that, in his sadra, and just Erich, Francis, Pau, Bendu were there. And either Balnatu or Nanakher, I don't remember, one of them was called over for that period to stay at Mehrabad just to keep watch, or to be on the veranda all the time and see nobody came through the gate of Guru Prasad, entered without knowing. So there we sat, and there the "Welcome to My World" record was played. And Baba said to Francis, "Listen carefully, listen carefully. The words are very good too. So, listen carefully. And as the song started, as if to help us understand the words more clearly, Baba gestured each word like a pantomime of the whole thing. And it was like, welcome to my world. Or when it came to the line, knock and the door will open, seek and you will find. Each word Baba gestured. And then when it came to the line, I'll be waiting there with my arms unfurled. He held out his hands like that, waiting just for you. Till then, he still kept them like that. Welcome to my world. And we didn't know it was a message to us, that it was really being sung for all. And he had me play it again. Play it again, play it again. Now listen carefully. And again, Baba went through the gestures of the song while the song was being played, in utter silence and quiet of that room. He also liked the lighter songs of Jim Reeves, particularly that one, Snowflakes, Snowflakes, and Baba would do with his fingers, all the snow falling. And then another record that was played was by Harry Belafonte, Coconut Water. Ah, my Baba used to have a lot of fun with that. That is why we have a box full of Jim Reeves records, long playing, smaller ones, just take that.
Very often Baba would bring home to us, you see, as to how close we were to him and how privileged we were to be close to him, and the responsibility that was on our shoulders, you see, of our being so close to him. In different ways he would tell us. In the morning session, you see, Mani told you how Baba sometimes would say that, well, how precious gems, you see, we were, how precious we were to him, like gems, and so forth. But all that never, so to say, made us feel happy, knowing fully well that there was something in store for us, you see. Some more work, or something that needed all our attention, and so forth. But occasionally Baba would tell us this story, when we sometimes failed to stand up to his expectations, you see. And the story is this, that he would tell us, that in the days, olden days, you see, there was the law of the land to put to death an adulteress. And that the person would be brought in the market square, tied to a pillar there, and anybody and everybody passing by had to throw a stone or a shoe or something like that, you see, and to hit the body, so that gradually the wounds created would kill the person. It's a slow, painful death that was to be brought about. So, one day he tells us the story that there was a lady who was accused of adultery and brought there to the market square and tied to the pillar and was exposed to the crowd. Everybody who passed there, you see, had to throw something. So they were throwing stones at her. After some days, it so happened that the lady's daughter had to pass by that route. Seeing her mother being in that situation and having to abide by the law of the land, She didn't know what to do. So she had to throw something. So what she did was, got an idea. She got a rose flower, and when she passed by, she threw a rose at her, and it hit her. So Baba said, "Do you know that the stones that were aimed at her and that hit her did not hurt her as much as that delicate, fragrant rose that was thrown at her by her own daughter? It hurt her most. Likewise, when you don't stand up to my expectations, the trust that I have put into you, it hurts me quite a great deal. Even if the whole world were to disown me, you see, and not do as I would want them to do, it won't hurt me. But those who are close to me and live with me, and if one of them, once even, were to let me down, it hurts me most. Because that one is so close to me, as the daughter was close to the mother." That's the story, I think. Yeah. Wow. It so happened that Baba sent us to the south for the usual must hunt, and I had been to the very south of India, you know, that little point there, the end of the peninsula. So there is a very famous temple called Rameshwaram Temple. Inside the temple, we had to go there. We had to go to every nook and corner to find out the whereabouts of any good must or a saint. So the information that I had got was that it was somewhere near the temple there, in a corner. So I went inside and searched. I think somebody was by my side. I don't remember now who he was. Might be Baidul, Kaka, Pendu, I don't know. I think it was Kaka. Kaka, right, in my South India tours. So we were there. So we both went there. So we saw, naturally, when we were inside the temple, we tried to find out where that man was sitting and all that. All of a sudden, you see, we came across the symbolic representation of the different yugas, you know. You know, in India there is that belief that at the very beginning, well, there was the Satyuga, when truth weighed heavy, you see, on us all. You see. That means everything was straight, truthful. Everything was painted in the color of truth, so to say.
And predominant.
Not predominant. There was no... the truth prevailed, so to say. It was the era of truth, in short. It's called Sat Yug. Sat means truth. Yug means era. Then after that comes the Treta Yug. Then comes the Dwapar. And then comes the Kali Yug. That's common. So the duration of the Sat Yug is quite a big period, you see. Very big period. Then, during that period, you see, man has to strive to realize himself and free himself from that birth and death business, you see, that we have taken upon ourselves. And in that period, it seems, it's believed, that it was very difficult for human beings to realize God. It's paradoxical, isn't it? In the era of truth, it's very difficult for one to realize God means what? It was not difficult in the sense that it took lot of efforts. It's like this, say, in this Yug, Kali Yug, and by the way, Kali Yug is the period or the era where man has to labor least in order to realize God, relatively, with the era of truth, you see. Why? Because everything truthful is there, everything was so pleasant, and everything is so congenial to one realizing God, you see, to that attitude of mind and heart, when one can easily realize God. It's so simple there. So naturally God realization should be so simple at the time. No, it wasn't so. Because what happened was, that was the natural course for man to realize God in his own natural way, you see, through the process of forgetting himself. And the hand of the God-man was not there to help man to reach him. The hand of his grace was not bestowed upon mankind in that era. So as ages passed by, then what happened was that even now it is as much difficult or more difficult. It should have been much more difficult for man to realize God, realize himself as his true self. But then we have got the assurance of the God-man that, well, never mind, the man will have to pass through this era of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga means the Yuga, the era of machine. It's a machine age. Kal means machine, you see. And where everything is dealt with the help of machine, you see. Everything is accomplished or attained with the help of machine. Even you are going to the God-man's house or abode is accomplished through the help of the plane, you see, machine, you see. Or jumbo jets and so forth, you see, can bring a crowd of Baba people from across the ocean, you see. So it's a helpful thing in a way. But then the environment is such that the distraction is so great that it's very difficult for one to concentrate and become realized. So the assurance is there that in Kali Yuga, what will happen is that I assure you that even if you were to take my name once with your last breath, you will realize me. You will be liberated. That means you will be liberated from this chain of birth and death. But after all, what is Kali Yuga? What is this Kali Yuga, you see? What is it? How is it depicted? What is this? What is this Satyug and Treta Yuga and Dwapar and all this? Treta means the third Yuga, Dwapar means the second, and so forth. You see. Now, what happens is that when I go to that temple, what do I find symbolically represented? The Kali Yuga there. And what was the symbol? Man sitting on the lap of a woman. It must have been depicted some, you may call, I may not exaggerate and say thousands of years ago, but say even hundreds of years ago, you see. But there was somebody who had visualized this. And say, I just looked at it. I said, wonderful. The way they have depicted it, because in that year, early 30s when I visited, you see, I had just sensed, you see, that we are coming to that age when man seems to be on the lap of a woman, you see. So that's the symbol of Kali Yuga, when man will be governed by a woman. But for you people it may sound, so what is this? It's trash what Eris says. And what is that symbolic? Nothing. But in India it means a great deal, you see. When man is supposed to be the one who controls the destiny of not himself, not his wife or children, but of the seven generations who are closely knit together with his generation. Man is responsible for the liberation of all around him. So man is considered to be in the form of God, you see, a replica of God. And the duty of the wife, the woman, who is there as a life partner in India for a man, is to assist his man in order to attain that liberation which will liberate his seven generations, which included her. So when that man were to be depicted to be seated on the lap of a woman, what has become of man? Oh God, that's Kali Yuga. That's how it is.
When Eric has read out correspondence of so many people to Baba,
He can be peaceful.
No, this is impossible.
Worse than Delia?
It's no writing.
That's right. I thought he was scribbling in a hurry.
Yeah. Baba got physical bone.
That on the top part is just to indicate there was
physical bone broken.
So as to break the backbone
of the material aspect of machine.
Meaning the machine age.
Yeah.
You better transpose that right away. I can write it out.
No, it's all right. So while we are on this machine age, you see, Kalyuga, you know, Kal means machine, age means yug. So one day on 5th of February 1959, Baba tried to dilate upon his undergoing the accident, you know. He had two accidents, as you know, in 1952 and 1956. So Baba, as far as I remember, Baba must have some meaning behind telling us the following, you see. And Baba tells us that Baba got his physical bones broken so as to break the backbone of the material aspect of machine, meaning the machine age. Leaving intact the spiritual aspect of the age. So where is that? So keeping intact its spiritual aspect. That's what Baba said. I remember.
Thing is time, and we talked of so many years, and we asked, well, how many years was this yuga, and how many years ago was the world before this one, because it has to disseminate and dissolve and be created. It just keeps on and on. So when we were so concerned about the number of years, and then Baba gave us this example, which made us realize that what is time in that sense, relatively, that the whole of this rebirth of the world and then taking in, and then dissolution of it. Baba sat there and said, breathe in, and he said it's just like breathing in, breathes out, it's all again, all what we call thousands and thousands of years with God is just like we breathe in and breathe out, and breathe in and breathe out. How then can there be that importance to time as we try to portray it or think it? Although Baba comes to our level and makes us understand that, but it is that unimportant, because it's just the just like breathing in and out. And another example he gave was...
So
like
that is
when
the gap between inhaling and exhaling is the time factor. The gap that is called preservation.
Yes, that's right. The inhaling and exhaling, and that's right. Another example he gave was of the tide that comes in, and the tide goes out, and the tide... And how many innumerable times this has happened, just as the tide... How many innumerable times this has happened, just as the tide comes in every day, and it has gone on and on and being for thousands of years, the tide has come in and the tide has gone out. So all that we are seeking to know, no matter how far back we go, would be only just that one